What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Also joining us is Podcast Producer Ben Ellman. Hey, Ben.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We're back. A bit of a summer break, certainly for our live stream, but we're gearing up for more news that's going to be happening throughout this month and certainly next month. The new iPhone's coming. Like, we all know this stuff is happening. This week, though, I think the biggest news is Apple announcing that's investing another $100 billion in U.S. manufacturing. That's on top of the $500 billion they already announced back in February. And all of this seems like it's meant to appease the Trump administration and Trump himself, and also hopefully avoid like the whole tariff mess, too. So we'll be diving into that whole news, a bunch of other like random bits, too. And we'll be taking some reader questions and listener questions. So stay tuned for all of that. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. I'd love to see more questions. We'd love to like do more of these Q&A segments. And also your questions can be used for Ask Engadget, which is like a big section on the site itself, too. So that's something we could be writing up and answering your questions there. Podcast@engadget.com. So the big news, or semi-big news, because we were trying to put this show together, and there's really, honestly, just like little bits of things happening. But it is Apple announcing that it's committing another $100 billion, you know, to U.S. manufacturing. We have the story written up at Engadget, and basically they're committing to stuff that we already know that Apple's doing, basically more Corning hardware. Kind of an interesting part of that, too, is that they announced that they're essentially working with Samsung for something as well, potentially building image sensors in Texas. So that news came out as well. Up till now, Apple's been using Sony sensors, right, Sam? For their cameras?
I believe so. Yeah.
So that's kind of going to be a potentially big change. But really, this is all optics. I feel like all this is optics. We have a really extensive piece on it here. And the idea of Apple like building more stuff in the US, that's not entirely too surprising. It partially does seem driven by the whole chaotic Trump tariff stuff. After this was all announced, Trump announced that he would be, it just kind of offhanded. Said that electronics or things with using chips would be tariffed at 100%. And by doing this dog and pony show, Apple will hopefully avoid it. The grossest part of this, I think, was towards the end of the ceremony where Tim Cook presented Donald Trump with a plaque that was made in America. One-of-a-kind plaque using Corning glass. They're the ones who make Gorilla Glass. And also a 24-karat solid gold base. So in the first Trump administration, Apple did similar things. It said, like, yeah, we're going to be committing more to U.S. manufacturing. That made Trump look good. And now they're just adding money to that overall statement, but also gifting him a gold gift. And to me, that just seems absolutely gross. To me, this feels like the low point of Tim Cook's CEO career, and probably something we'll, you know, refer back to whenever we think back of this crazy era and the history of Apple too. But Sam, what did you think about when you saw all of this happening?
I mean, you call it a plaque. I kind of call it like a participation trophy. I mean,
yeah, basically.
Trump's a ferret. He likes shiny things. And so
he likes gold.
Yeah. Came together and they took some materials that they work with and they made him a shiny thing and they gave him a gift. And then the ferret can go play with his little bauble. This is like the silliest thing ever because, you know, Apple is an American company. For them, they're like, oh, let's bend over backwards and invest $100 billion in the country that we already are headquarters in, have been, you know, for the entire existence of the company. This is like, oh, we're going to invest more in the partners that we already work with. It's like,
yeah,
okay, this is like people are acting like Trump put a bunch of pressure on Apple to do the stuff that they were going to do anyways. It's like, oh, okay, great.
It feels like it's Apple responding to the climate, right? And part of that response is, oh my God, if we get tariffed, a whole ton, we'll have to raise prices. That will hurt sales. That will make stock go down. And I'm sure the board and investors would not want that to happen. So
for sure. I mean, this is definitely like, you know, Apple appeasing it to get out from under the boot of Trump's, you know, tariff spending spree. And okay, fine. It's just, you know, it like you said, it just it feels a little weaselly, it feels a little gross, and you know, you wish you didn't have to give the president of the United States a participation trophy so that he would stop bothering you.
It feels incredibly gross. It also reminds me of the thing that happened. I feel like we're not talking enough about of when Trump stole that Club World Cup trophy, right? Like yeah, he was at an event and just took, because it was gold, he just took it, and they're like, what are you doing? You were just
and then
to hold
like
that.
a lot of outlets or media outlets had to Photoshop him out of the photos because he wouldn't even leave the soccer team. He was in the photos. Yeah. And he was standing there while the soccer team, who had actually played the game and won the trophy, was sitting there trying to celebrate. It's all very silly.
He did nothing. He just took the trophy. Just took it.
The one thing that's interesting is that, like, as far as Apple's concerned, I think this happened like within the last week or two, is that Tim Cook has now been CEO of Apple longer than Steve Jobs was ever CEO of Apple, including, you know, his reign as interim before he was, like, you know, officially made CEO. And so it's like, in a lot of ways, it's like, this is Tim Cook's Apple now, and this is Tim Cook's company. And so it's really like, you know, obviously, as a CEO, you have to deal with the circumstances of, you know, the current regime and all that stuff. But it's really interesting to see how, you know, Apple has evolved over the years, especially under, you know, as leadership has changed.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, all the companies in America are basically responding to like the state of affairs right now. They're all trying to figure out how to survive. So I don't think it's like on Apple personally to be like, oh my God, this makes them the worst. I think partially that title will probably go to Microsoft, because there was a recent Guardian story about how Azure is essentially powering a lot of these surveillance and I don't know, wartime planning from Israel going into Gaza and going into Palestine. So that to me seems absolutely gross. This is just bowing down to the king, it feels like. That feels like the ultimate thing. But it's not just Apple. It is the overall climate we're in. It just feels absolutely gross. And it's also, you know, we're going to talk about this. Nintendo's raising prices because tariffs are going to be hitting them, but they're raising prices on older Switch devices, not the Switch 2 yet. Sonos is going to be raising prices on a couple things. We've charted this over the last few months. Just feels like a real tin pot era dictatorship that we're living in right now when companies have to respond like this. I don't know what there else is to say. You know, the first, when I launched the stream, the first comment we got was, please don't get political. Literally everyone is responding to the politics that's happening right now. And a lot of it is batshit insane. Theft hiding in plain sight, bribes hiding in plain sight. And it is disgusting. I don't know what else. Does this make you think any less of Apple at this point, Sam or Ben?
I don't know. I think I wish they hadn't done it. So I guess a tiny bit, but like in the big scheme things, probably not. This is more of just like, hey, you know, a capitalist company is going to do whatever it takes to make sure that they can keep prices or costs down. Because, hey, if we have to raise prices, then probably profits, revenues are going to go down too. So, you know, they are making the rational move, but, you know, companies don't have a soul, right? It's companies do what the people in charge tell them to do. So
it shows the limits of capitalism in that all you can do is respond to market pressures and the insanity of the people in charge. Like, that's ultimately it. We noted in our report in the first Trump administration in 2019, Tim Cook says that Apple opened a Mac Pro factory in Texas to make Trump happy. That thing was up and running since 2013. And also that particular factory was also having a lot of issues. So that, again, was just like, hey, symbolic. Apple doing stuff in America. Trump can say, hey, he pumped up American manufacturing. We're not going to talk about the terrible jobs losses. We're not going to talk about the tanking economy or any of that other stuff. Like Trump gets a gold trophy and he gets to be happy for a minute, and Apple gets to avoid the tariffs. And that is the world we're living in. So,
and let's we'll not forget. Also see whether or not they actually do get to avoid the tariffs.
We'll see.
Yeah, not forget, tariffs are taxes. Tariffs taxes on us, because the people who import the stuff are the people who pay the tariffs. And then usually, pretty much in almost every circumstance, the people who buy the products, the cost gets passed down to them. So,
most definitely.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, which is entirely why, and I hope this is the last word on, you know, people saying don't get political, but like, it's hard not to get political when what's going to happen? Like, several months from now, somebody's going to be like, oh man, I want to buy a new TV, or I want to buy like a new computer, but things are so much more expensive now. Why is that? You're not allowed to say anything about politics when it attaches to tech, then you're going to be like, I have no idea why things are so much more expensive now than they were 18 months ago.
Yeah. Rather than don't get political, I think the slogan now should be, let's get political. Understand how the processes of power and levers of power being used to make your life worse. That's something we certainly try to point out here. I also want to point out, like, even though Apple's talking about putting some manufacturing in the US, the vast majority of their stuff is still going to be made in China, in India, where they're also doing more iPhone manufacturing.
They've done a lot to shift things toward India. And the headlines that I've seen recently is, since India has purchased a lot of like petrochemical stuff from Russia recently, whether or not Apple's new manufacturing in India could end up getting hit by tariffs, because now there are threats on greater tariffs to India because of this Russia petrochemical stuff.
Yeah. And also, hey, you can never trust a deranged dictator, basically. You know, look at what the colleges who have basically, again, poured gift money to the Trump administration, hoping to be left alone. They're still facing various sorts of punishment and fines. And, hiring practices are going to be heavily surveilled.
So one thing that I'm struck by here is that they say that they're investing $100 billion into, like, the U.S., but, like, I'm not seeing anything about AI data centers.
They did mention that before. So in February, they talked about the $500 billion. So this is $100 billion on top of $500 billion.
Okay, so a total $600 billion investment.
Yes, they were saying they were going to put a lot of that money towards AI data centers in the U.S., and that seems very likely. So, you know, there's that. And Apple's relationship with Corning, that is an American success story, right? The iPhone would not be possible without Gorilla Glass.
That's a New York State success story.
New York State success story. They tried to get me to go visit those labs, but they're over, like, by the Finger Lakes, I think, right? And
it's
I'm not going there.
It's a beautiful part of the country,
I'm not going
it's
there.
Hard to get to.
It's hard to get to. No, thank you, Corning. But anyway, whenever I hear the Finger Lakes, I just think of Jim Carrey when he guested in The Office. Like, I'm going to go to Finger Lakes. We have a vacation plan. Like, it was a funny thing. The only time I've ever seen that fully referenced. Anyway, that is an actual American manufacturing success story. A lot of people have written about that. We will see. We will see what happens. Certainly doesn't ultimately look good for Tim Cook, but we will see how any of this stuff looks good for Trump's economy moving forward. Let's move on to some other news. I mentioned the original Nintendo Switch is going to be getting a price hike. All the models of the Nintendo Switch, including the Switch OLED.
Switch 2, critically.
Yeah, not the Switch 2, because I think that was the whole drama when they announced the Switch and then Trump announced crazy tariffs. We thought, like, when they delayed pre-orders for the Switch 2 that they could potentially raise the prices. And I think a lot of people were thinking Nintendo just kind of priced the Switch 2 at the point where potentially maybe a little higher from the beginning, just anticipating some of this stuff too.
The prices are going up from, I think, $299, and that's what I think I paid for my Switch a number of years ago. I was so happy to get a Switch in February of 2020, and that was just because I happened to want a Switch. I wasn't following the news coming out of China about how people were coughing. I just got really lucky.
You were lucky, but at that point, yeah.
So it's going up, what, like almost $50?
We don't have final pricing yet. They're saying Target listed the Switch at $340, the Switch Lite at $230. So that's $40 more and $30 more, respectively. Target listed the Switch OLED at $400. That's $50 more than I paid at launch. I have a Switch OLED right now. If I could sell that thing close to that price, that would almost recoup the cost of the Switch 2. This is maddening, but people are still buying the older hardware too. So clearly there's, like, still some sort of demand for it. For people who have the Switch 2, what are you doing with your old Switches? Are you just keeping it around for some games? Are they going to your kids? I'd love to know, because my daughter is basically taking ownership of the Switch Lite that I have, because that is perfectly sized for her 6-year-old hands. But the Switch OLED is a really nice machine. Kind of don't want to leave that screen behind. So I don't know. We're trying to figure out things right now. Any other Nintendo news? I think there was something else we wanted to mention, right?
Yeah, there was another bit of Nintendo news, which is just that the Switch 2 sold really, 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 really well.
Yeah. Even though there's still a ton of stock, like you can go to stores and see them in stores right now.
Which is just like shows that Nintendo did really good like inventory planning this time. Because, I mean, it was really hard to find a Switch for a long time, especially in the middle of the pandemic. That had its own issues of like rolling lockdowns around the country, supply chain that we could not stop talking about through 2021 and 2022. But the numbers for the Switch 2 are that between when the Switch launched on June 5th and the end of the like window in which they were looking, which is June 30th, they sold 5.8 2 million units. That's crazy.
That's a lot. That's
I believe that's the fastest you know, console launch in history. So kudos to Nintendo. And the other thing is, even before the Switch 2 came out, Nintendo was like, hey, we are going to figure out a way to combat scalping. And hey, you know what? The best way to combat scalping is to have lots of inventory so that there isn't crazy demand and people can just go out and buy the Switch. Or Switch 2 in this case.
Yeah, the goal, according to, at least from what we've seen, Nintendo's goal is to sell 15 million Switch 2s by March 2026. At this rate, that seems very, very likely. Like, I really wonder what they'll hit. Like, maybe 20 by that point. Certainly, like, we're not even in the holiday season yet, and there are only still, like, two major games for the Switch 2. You've got Mario Kart World, and now Donkey Kong Bonanza just came out. But there's still, like, not a huge compelling system seller for a lot of people, too. So that's,
I think that'll
change
definitely by the end of the year, because we're gonna get Metroid Prime 4 and some other things. So I think there will be, you know, a more, you know, full-bodied lineup for the Switch 2, you know, by 2026.
Yeah. Just want to quickly, hey, we got, don't make a political right, except I just saw the news of something that just happened this morning. Trump says this Intel CEO, Lip-Bu-Tan, must resign immediately. Yay, chaos. Everything is just chaos every day.
Is that because of his nationality?
His nationality and his
goodness
ties
gracious.
To China. A post on Truth Social, he wrote, I'm going to say this with Trump capitalizations. The CEO of Intel is highly conflicted and must resign immediately. There is no other solution to this problem. Thank you for your attention to this problem. Yeah. Anyway. Lip-Bu-Tan took over as Intel CEO in March. He has not really had time to do much.
And it's also not like Intel needs this extra hassle. They've been having like problems upon problems for the last several years.
They've had
to the
many
point
problems,
where
yeah.
like their already religious CEO that just stepped down was at some points just posting Bible quotes. If you want a look into someone's like mental state, if they are just posting Bible quotes, things are probably not going that well.
Oh, man. So Trump's response comes after Republican Senator Tom Cotton wrote to Intel's board of directors asking about his ties to China and investments in the country. And let me see. He also raised concerns about Lip-Bu-Tan's time leading Cadence Design Systems, which had a Chinese military university as a customer. This is all according to TechCrunch. And then, yeah, you get Trump blowing up on a social media post, and something concrete could actually happen from this. Like the posting. This is the posting president. And once again, he is posting to potentially reshape major companies, reshape the technological landscape. Guys, it's all so much fun. In other news, we saw the story that OpenAI is removing ChatGPT conversations from Google. Why were they being indexed by Google in the first place? I don't... Make this chat discoverable was an option. Why would you want that? Why would you want that? Why is that even a thing? Do you guys have thoughts about
that?
I think
the idea might have originally been that you weren't going to use ChatGPT as your therapist or as someone that you're having having an emotional affair with.
They've been promoting those sorts of uses from the beginning, so I don't know. OpenAI is a really screwed up company, guys. Like, I talked about this problem I had before where I've been getting recurring charges from OpenAI for subscribing to ChatGPT. I'm not subscribed to ChatGPT. Like, I did it for like a month. to just, you know, test it out. I go on their website. I'm on the free account, but I'm still getting recurring credit card charges. So now I have to like go yell at somebody. They don't have humans to yell at. So I have to like yell at a bot until they stop the subscription and keep canceling the charge via my credit card company. That's the company we're basing the entire like future of technology on, is the company that can't get recurring subscriptions right. Anyway.
So I have some friends, some people close to me who have been caught in the tech layoffs. Some of them have been working in customer success and like all of those areas of tech companies where you work directly with the customer base. I can tell you from pretty good secondhand information from them telling me just about their job search that there are so many open roles at Anthropic and OpenAI right now, because I think they tried to build something that makes money first, and now they're realizing that they need to service those customers just like any other company who's charging a monthly fee might have to, and you can't just do it via your own chatbot. So we'll see how that works out. Like, there's just going to be a lot of new hires at these like AI development companies doing very, what's a good example, Amazon customer service kind of roles.
Yeah, that's something that speaks to me directly. Like, I care deeply about how users relate to technology. That was like my impetus for doing all this in the first place. Like, I worked in retail supporting electronic sales. I worked in IT for almost 10 years. Like, there's no chatbot that's going to really help people understand tech to this degree, because it assumes people will be able to like know what questions to ask or know how to like it talk with a chatbot. Like, so much of being somebody helping in customer support is literal therapy. It's like, okay, calm down. Your thesis is gone. You saved it here. First, you need to take 10 minutes to calm down. I had like a literal procedure to help people calm down from freaking out when they had data loss. Then you solve the problem. So, yeah.
Much like economics, it seems like a lot of chatbot use cases assume that humans are completely rational actors, and they are not.
This is why I hate taking economics classes. But anyway, other bit here, not as like interesting or fun as anything else, but Disney announced it. It's going to be fully consuming Hulu in 2026. Most of Hulu's content is already within the Disney Plus app, but the Hulu app still exists as a standalone thing. That's going to go away in 2026. The Hulu brand will take over for the Star brand, which is that that was a streaming service and channel that Disney had internationally. So people in America have no clue what that's about, but that's in like Europe and Asia. Star is like a big thing. So now that's just going to be Hulu. I think this is more of like a tech stack thing, because right now it feels like they're two completely different systems. When you click the Hulu tab in the Disney Plus app, like the actual show launching experience and everything is very different than within Disney Plus. So they may have to do like a tech rebuild. Maybe they'll probably have to rework the app too, so that it's like, you know, it just feels more consistent and a little more unified. And then we'll see where they go from there. Cause I'm in a weird state. Like, I'm getting, because of the crazy set of deals that happen in America with carriers and whatnot, I think because I have AT&T internet, they're giving me Disney Plus for free. But now that Hulu's a part of Disney Plus, it's only the Hulu with ads. And you have no ability to like go in and tweak anything, because they have not built that function. Your service comes from AT&T. You can't change anything. So maybe they're going to make things a little more flexible for people who have like weird separated Hulu and Disney.
I hope so. The other day I was trying to sign up for HBO Max, and there's like a bundle where you can add HBO Max to your Hulu Disney deal, but you can't. You can add the ad free or the ad supported one, but you can't add the 4K one to the bundle for some unknown reason. It's just literally not an option, and it's just like, why? That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I have a Verizon. That's where I get my mobile from, is Verizon, and they give you free HBO Max, but it's only the low tier 1080p HBO Max. So I have two HBO Max accounts now, one that's free and one that I pay for, because I need the freaking 4K, man. Some of those shows you just need to see in 4K with HDR and everything. It is worth it, but only for sickos like me and people who have, I don't know, really killer home theater setups and whatnot. Any other thoughts about Hulu officially going away? Hulu's a weird thing.
If as soon as Disney bought everything, it always feels like, hey, Disney is the name that people know. They're going to throw everything into Disney app. And, you know, in some respects, this is like the most logical thing ever because, hey, you put all the content that Disney owns in the Disney app and that's the thing you use. Okay, cool.
But just from like the founding of Hulu, because the founding of Hulu happened between basically all of the major like over-the-air TV companies in 2007.
Except for CBS. It was ABC, Fox, and NBC.
Yeah, it was like a panic response to Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was a panic response, and it was like it was super interesting to see all of these different things on Hulu in the very early days, because I remember I spent a lot of time on Hulu when I don't think you even needed to get a subscription at that point. In like 2009 or something, you might have had some ads, but they were like just getting like the programmatic streaming ads going at that time too. It was a weird Wild West situation.
Also, nobody thought Hulu would even be a thing. Like, I remember when it was announced, people were like, "What is this silly company called Hulu?" And it's a combination between Fox, ABC, and NBC. There's no way this will survive. Hulu kind of did it didn't do incredibly well, and it had some really terrible redesigns. I think like the 2012 era, I believe, redesign that made it just freaking inaccessible. Was crazy, but as a business, like as a project, it was really interesting. And then now it's just all consumed by Disney, essentially all consumed by ABC now, and Fox exists within that stuff too, is within Disney now. Like, it's all Disney. Simpsons
is true.
Within Disney.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, because they bought 20th Century and everything.
Yeah, it's all American corporate life. Like, it is just like one big fish eating everybody until they're too huge. Let's move on to some Q&A from our audience. Mark Dell in the chat left a good one immediately when we asked for questions. This is what we want, folks. Just leave us stuff to answer. He writes, "I just got a new TV, the LG G5. Congrats. And it came with a soundbar. I have it hooked up over HDMI to the TV, and that feels weird. Should I hook a soundbar up with HDMI, or should I be using optical?" This is a really good point, because it does feel weird. For anybody who's been doing AV stuff before, like HDMI ARC and before, like, thing,
definitely.
Like, you were using optical or SPDIF, or you were using a digital coax connection to you know, other devices or something. But no, now it all happens over HDMI. The downside is you have to sacrifice an HDMI port on your TV to do that. You usually have like one or two eARC ports. You plug it in there and you get fully uncompressed sound. The thing about optical is that it doesn't have a lot of bandwidth. So if you want Dolby Atmos, if you want multi-channel, I believe optical tapped out at 5.1, like 5.1 48 kilohertz. But we've moved on since then. Like, since optical, we have Dolby Atmos, we have DTS:X, we have all these things that use a lot more speakers and need a lot more bandwidth. So yes, hook that soundbar up over HDMI. It is confusing. You may have to like dive into some TV settings, and you may have to like reboot things a couple of times. I did this at my vacation house because I bring a Sonos Beam whenever I go stay somewhere, just to have like better sound, even if it's a crappy TV. And you have to like change it in the TV settings and reboot a couple times and hope and pray the HDMI connection clicks. But once it does, it should work pretty great. So yes, use HDMI, folks. Give up on optical. You don't need optical anymore. Unless you're doing like a weird thing from your computer to like stereo speakers, then optical would probably be fine.
But definitely, you know, for older folks, or, you know, people who have, like you said, you know, experience with like old traditional AV setups, it does feel a little bit weird because in some ways it's like too easy. But then, sometimes you're hoping that like, hey, the eARC gets detected properly by, you know, both devices. And then that can be when you run into issues.
It's very confusing. Like, Mark is like, my soundbar also has HDMI. It's just sound. Yes, HDMI feeds both sound and video. So now you're just using it for sound for one thing. And
I remember when I was reviewing the first gen Philips Hue Sync box that does the ambient lighting. It was really confusing to do eARC with a soundbar plus that box. And so it was like, it took a few steps. And I think they've gotten better with the 4K sync box, which I haven't tested. But yeah, it depending on how many devices you have plugged in, if it's just a soundbar, eARC is great. If you are juggling with like multiple devices and a ton of different speakers, that's when you start to consider like, hey, do I maybe need a proper receiver or stuff like that?
And it's I just feel like, yeah, if you're an older user, you're just not used to it. It just feels weird. And the thing about old analog connections is that if you had everything connected properly, it just worked, right? It worked immediately. The thing about digital connections is that you have to go through like HDCP, handshakes, like a copyright protection shit. So if that stuff isn't working properly, even if it's all connected properly, it's just not going to work. So you have to that's where the reboots come in.
And a lot of times you have to dive through the menus.
You just have to hope and pray. I feel like there's some prayer involved with a lot of these things, but digital connections should be easier. But the thing is, analog connections are actually easier because it's either they work or they sound fuzzy or they don't. Digital is like, I don't know what layer of copyright protection is stopping me from seeing what I need to see right now. Certainly if you did like that Philips Hue thing plus the soundbar, like there are so many chains that HDMI has to hop that it could just die. It could just refuse to work. It could just stop working. It's a pain in the butt. But when it works, it is easier. The cabling is easier. So that's nice. Yeah, read Bible verses to it, Mark, as he's saying in the chat. I think that'll probably help. While people come up with other questions, I wanted to answer some stuff I've gotten around Windows 10. I'm actually writing about that right now. The Windows 10 end of life is October 14th, I believe. It's mid-October. And people are asking me, what do I do? I have a Windows 10 PC. I've refused to update because I really like Windows 10. I don't want to deal with Windows 11. What do I do? And I'm writing up a guide right now. And basically it comes down to this, if you can update to Windows 11, you probably should. It's fine. There's nothing actually terrible about it that will hurt your experience. I don't think there are any major incompatibilities unless you know for sure something critical that you use does not work in Windows 11. The initial controversy around Windows 11 was that the taskbar icons were centered. The start menu was centered. And then we yelled at Microsoft and they eventually let you move it to the left. My initial complaint was that they only let you view the taskbar icons in a compressed way, which looked a lot like the macOS dock, which I freaking hate, because then you don't get individual icons for different windows. Then you have to right click on that icon, then click down from a drop down menu of the window you're looking for. I hated that. So eventually Microsoft did add the ability to ungroup the apps. So you could just have a mess of icons at the bottom of your screen. That's what I want. I'm a Windows sicko. I want to click one button and go to one window and know exactly what that is. I have a big monitor. That's how it should work. So for me, they ultimately fixed a lot of those initial usability issues. Windows 11 is stable. It's secure. If you are getting any updates on a Windows 10 system to say, hey, just upgrade to Windows 11, you can do it, then that means your system's probably compatible. Where the problems come in is boot stuff. So your computer has to support Safe Boot, and it has to support a TPM 2.0 connection or a TPM 2.0, I don't know what you call that, authentication. That's the thing that'll be controlling security for Windows Hello and all that stuff. And if you do BitLocker file encryption, if you don't have that in your system, I believe there were some workarounds for that, but for most people, it's probably not worth doing. In that case, you can subscribe to the extended service for Windows 10 to get security updates for another year, but that's $30.
That's probably what I'm going to do just because I have a desktop, and my desktop is the last gen that wasn't able to upgrade to Windows 11. And it's really funny because you can pay for the extended service upgrade program, and you can one way to pay for it is redeem 1,000 Microsoft reward points, which I believe you can still earn by clicking on random things in Bing. So you can it takes a silly way to you have to use Bing and go answer a couple questions every day, but you can basically get it for free, and it will give you an extra year to decide what you want to do because the ESU only lasts to October 13th, 2026.
Yeah, I wrote up that story. I think a lot of people who are Microsoft loyalists, or if you play a lot of Xbox stuff, you earn points within doing some stuff on Xbox too. So you probably have points and you don't even know. So you know, Microsoft fanatics probably can just get that for, you know, another year. What is essentially happening for Windows 10 is that it's no longer going to be updated. There are no more security updates. You're kind of on your own unless you subscribe to the ESU. You could just keep running Windows 10. You could just keep going. But then every day, that OS gets less and less secure. So
you're just raw dogging the internet at that point.
It could get to the point where somebody discovers a critical vulnerability, a zero-day hack that could, you know, get into your system or something or wipe your system, and you are not protected against it at all. I would say the only people who should just keep using Windows 10, for you, Sam, you're a smart user. You probably would be able to use it fine without subscribing to the ESU. But if you can't update to Windows 10, how old is that computer? Like, how old is your desktop, Sam?
Oh, I mean, we've even gone, this is like a gadget podcast topic going back like a year or two now. I am due for a big overhaul desktop refresh. I'm probably going to just start from scratch. My case is, I was trying to figure it out. My case, I bought it in 2013. So it's a 12, 13 year old case, or maybe even older than that. And it's like, okay, you know, I would like some more USB-C ports on the case. So it's like, you know, it's time for me to upgrade the case. And if I'm going to do that and I need a new CPU and I need a new GPU, I might as well just do a full brand new build. So that'll happen. And in some ways, this is like, hey, it's giving me a year to prepare for like, oh, I can go figure out the case I want. You know,
I would buy stuff soon, Sam. Sam, if you were thinking of a computer, I would not wait till next year. Do it soon. Because everything is getting more expensive. It's unfortunate. And there's also a nice array of chips and GPUs that you can find right now. The GPUs are going to be the ones that hurt you the most. But look at pre-builds. I've been building every desktop I've had since I've been in college. So that was since 2001. I built every single desktop I've had. But these days, you can get good deals from bundles. Like, people are making good hardware. Like, it just saves the
edit. I'm weirdly picky about cases. I don't know why. I need to have the case. It has to look as good as the rest of the PC. And it's like, I've gone on, you know, to press briefings and be like, hey, Alienware, will you sell me that, like, Aurora case, just so I don't want the components. I like the case, and can I? And they're like, no, we're not gonna sell it individually.
Yeah,
and you've been there when I've done that, and it's like, it's always funny because it's like, there's some really cool, you know, cases from some of the big manufacturers. And when they sell pre-builds, they like selling the whole system instead
of just the case. That's part of the appeal,
Which is a bummer for people who like to go around and hack.
I can confidently build computers. Like, I've been doing it for a while. There's always that like Hail Mary moment when you turn it on for the first time. The thing with the pre-build is that it should just work. Like, sometimes they do ship it without the GPU plugged in because it's heavy and may weigh things down. So you usually have to like plug that in, then hit go. But the thing about a pre-build is they do the wiring for you, right? Like, and the thing I'm bad at is like hiding wires and organizing cables and shit. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Don't ever look at the other side, the opposite side of the motherboard, because it's just a rat's nest in there. But like the side with the window looks okay.
For me, the pre-build is just like, hey, can you just do this work for me, please, so I can get a computer that goes. Are you still thinking full size, Sam, or are you looking at like mini?
I've always been in a mid tower. I every once in a while I think of like doing a small form factor just for a little bit of extra space, but then I always think about how I'm just gonna skin the, like, you know, tear up my knuckles when I'm trying to in there, like trying to get everything to fit and whatnot. So I'm still in between if I want to like a SFF case or, you know, more of a mid tower thing.
A lot of the reason, like, I've always been mid tower, but like, hey, since PCIe kind of became the standard, there's very few reasons to get like additional cards. Like, really, you just need to get, you have onboard audio that's good, you have onboard networking that's good, usually Wi-Fi is onboard. Like, you don't need anything else. The only reason I have an additional card in my system right now is that don't buy a Gigabyte motherboard, Sam. Don't buy Gigabyte hardware in general, because I think at one point I installed a GPU and like something internally broke on the built-in Ethernet, just something shorted out. So I had to get a card just for that. So don't buy Gigabyte in general. But you don't actually need that much expansion space. What you need is space for SSDs. And small form factor systems can do that pretty well.
Yeah. Lots of M.2 slots, as many as you can get.
So do we have any other questions from chat? Or, by the way, Windows 10. So upgrade to Windows 11, do the ESU, or raw dog it, baby, and pray. And be careful. Like, if your system is that old,
Yeah, but how long are you actually going to be safe online after all
a year? A couple years. Like, Windows XP.
You think that it's as long as a couple years?
You'd probably be fine for a couple years. If you're not, like, out there torrenting stupid stuff and pirating and being dumb, like,
yeah,
you're fine.
You know, if you go to, like, yes, established sites, you'll probably be fine. But, you know, the more, you know, deep diving into the dark reaches of the internet, you know, that's when you start to, you know, open yourself up to a lot more risk.
For sure. And sometimes it can be dangerous. Like, I know, hey, CNET and download.com, I like people who work there, but I know specifically that that company was injecting, like, weird adware into a lot of downloads, and that was making them money, and that's why they did it. So that may not necessarily have been super nefarious hardware or software, but it was stuff on your computer that you probably didn't want. So that's the sort of thing you have to worry about, too. If your computer is too old to get Windows 11, you need a new computer. I'm sorry. Like, now is the time to upgrade. I don't want to sound like Dell and all the PC companies like, oh, yeah, buddy, now is the time to get people to buy new computers. But if your computer is, like, almost 10 years old, as your desktop probably is, Sam, yeah, it's time. It is time to upgrade to something else.
I think we have one last quick question. Kevin says, asks, how will PC motherboards change with the new NVIDIA SoC coming soon? What do you guys think?
We don't know what that is. We don't know what that is. And what that is, that's the ARM chip, right, that they're potentially working on because it's an SoC. I don't know. Is that going to be like a... I can imagine somebody making a really good small form factor motherboard with that SoC on it, essentially doing what Apple does with its M-series chips, but a thing you can buy and plug into any case. That would be cool. But I think that would only apply to small form factor systems. I don't think random case maker or random motherboard makers are going to be making stuff just for this NVIDIA chip. This is probably going to start with a few partners, probably NVIDIA and ASUS and people that they like will probably be doing, like, their premier partners may do some stuff like that. I have been thinking about, like, what do I have, because I test so many GPUs, I have stuff like just sitting behind me. I'm like, I could just make a little small form factor system and put that near my home theater. And that is a thing that I do PC gaming on a big screen, rather than stringing a 50-foot HDMI cable from my PC here, because doing keyboard and mouse stuff from a PC that's far away is actually really hard and annoying. I don't know. I don't think broadly anything will change, but that if that NVIDIA SoC comes out, what Apple has done with the M-series chips is kind of remarkable, right? Because they have created this really, really smart small platform with really powerful GPUs and CPUs, and it does pretty good gaming. Like, you can game on a MacBook Air or even the MacBook Pro without spending too much for the bigger GPUs. So that could be really interesting. I don't think the overall industry is going to change that. What do you think, Sam?
I mean, like, you know, I want to give Qualcomm a little bit of credit because their Snapdragon X Elite stuff is, like, pretty performant based on, you know, they want to be very power efficient. And for the performance, it is really, really competitive. We, you know, we've seen Microsoft partner with Qualcomm to put it in Surface laptops and stuff like that. And so the issue is that Microsoft, it just wasn't as good as Apple in gracefully transitioning over to, you know, ARM-based stuff. And so that, you know, it just wasn't as seamless as it was with, you know, Apple had Rosetta and stuff like that.
Because they did all that work themselves, right? Like, they did that work internally to rebuild macOS and be like, hey, force developers. But they also did a really good emulator that made the older Intel apps work well. So yeah, Weathered Shields points out, ARM-based Windows only works if the OS is optimized for it. It's taking forever for Windows to compete. In the last year, as you're pointing out, Sam, those Snapdragon chips, last year when Microsoft launched the Copilot systems, that also came with a new version of Windows 11 with serious ARM enhancements. Like, that thing actually works.
Yeah, just ARM support based. Yeah,
it works well
from the ground up. And at this point, a little while ago, you know, Photoshop has they fully support ARM chips for basically all of the important Photoshop apps. And that was kind of one of, like, the last remaining kind of hurdles that people were trying to get around.
I could totally see living with, like, a Windows ARM PC as a productivity machine, as, like, a super light laptop just for productivity. Games is the problem. Games is the real big problem, because those things have good GPUs, but Steam and a lot of games built for Windows do not support Windows on ARM at all. And the emulation is not great.
Yeah. Trust raised me to this day that Riot for League of Legends and Valorant and all of those games, they have kernel-based anti-cheat protection, which is completely unnecessary and doesn't need to exist. But because it's kernel-based, it only runs on x86 stuff. And so if you want to do, even if you have Windows and you can install the game, but because you can't install the anti-cheat, you can't play League of Legends on ARM-based systems right now. And it's super frustrating.
I think Fortnite as well, a couple other like major games, like just do not work on those systems. So the things that don't work on a Steam Deck, kind of similar, basically, because they require like Windows proper, Windows x86 to work. I think the bigger, there's all sorts of stuff happening right now, right? Like there is, there's the idea of Steam being a thing people could install on gaming machines moving forward, like SteamOS proper. There's the upcoming PC handhelds, like more PC handhelds, but Microsoft getting in on that game too. Yeah.
There's yep. RISC-V systems or chips lurking in the background, which is like, people have been talking about them, like kind of threatening the like ARM movement. That remains to be seen, but it is a thing.
It is absolutely a thing.
I'm just still surprised that ARM is a British company. Like, yes, it's owned by SoftBank now, but man, I haven't heard anything about the GB like being consequential in software development for a long time. Like, they've got DeepMind and what else?
I mean, that's partially why I think the British regulatory folks were like, you NVIDIA is not buying you. Part of it was like they did not want to, I think, potentially lose that, but also they were worried about like how big NVIDIA would become if they took this big thing and made ARM a part of NVIDIA proper.
Okay, so thanks everybody for your questions. Remember, you can always send additional questions to our email address, podcast@engadget.com, and send in more, please.
More, please. I'll do one because I see one right here. WX Romer asks, what do we think about the Lenovo Yoga 7 with Ryzen CPU and Copilot not using for gaming? The thing I say about Lenovo hardware in general, I do not trust Lenovo hardware. I do not trust Lenovo's manufacturing right now. I don't trust the longevity of it. Sam, you've reviewed them and tested them more recently than I have. Like, what do you think about a system like that today?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're just talking about pure productivity, not for gaming, I like the Yoga 7 and the Yoga 9 lines quite a bit. So, and especially with the Ryzen CPUs, especially for laptops,
they've
gotten a lot more power efficient in the last few years. And so, I don't really have any issues with that as kind of a general productivity device.
If they're looking at the Yoga 7 for the flexing, for the ability to like move the screen around, I would think the HP Spectre X360 is a better machine in general. Like, I trust their build quality. The kind of like the thing people aren't talking about is that Asus has been making great, great laptops lately, like a lot. And I think their build quality has improved so much. They have so much experience as an OEM that I don't think that's kind of the thing that's always been holding Lenovo back since, you know, Lenovo took over IBM ThinkPad and everything. They did not have the same level of expertise when it came to manufacturing. And I noticed build quality issues. So I would look actually more towards the ZenBooks, you know, as a potential thing too. Anything with a Ryzen CPU is going to be good. So I like those chips. All right, let's move on to the rest of the show. Anything you want to shout out that you're working on, Sam?
Yeah, speaking of Lenovo, I actually just got the Lenovo ThinkBook Plus Gen 6 Rollable in for review. We saw this back at CES. This is like a 14-inch laptop, but it has a flexible display that with a push of a button goes from 14 to about 16 or 17 inches, and it kind of extends just up, and the screen just gets taller and taller, and it looks really weird in person when you do it, because like the aspect ratio is completely like very funky. But the fact that this thing even exists is like people have been talking about like trying company or, you know, manufacturers been talking about trying to do this for years now. And I think it's really interesting that, hey, this is actually something you can just straight up buy now. They didn't make a ton of sacrifices. It has somewhat limited USB-C ports, but aside from that, you know, you got a standard, you know, standard CPU setup. The keyboard feels completely normal. So I'm really interested to see, like, once I actually have a chance to, like, really, you know, unbox it, set it up, and check it out to see how I feel about it. Obviously, there is the price. It is a bit pricey. I think it's like $3,000, but I gotta, you know, I gotta check the numbers again on that.
I'm looking at this thing, Sam.
Like you said,
and what I just said about Lenovo build quality. So this is a machine with the extending screen. I'm like, Oh, buddy, how long? I can't even trust a standard Lenovo laptop. I don't know about this thing, but it'll be fun to play with, I'm sure.
I am a flexible device, yeah. Flexible display device apologist. I love seeing what wild and silly things manufacturers can come up with. And so this is like, this is one of the things is like, if you're going to buy this as your main system, just don't. Okay. Like this is for the sickos. This is like the most enthusiast targeted, sort of laptop ever. And if you want to have it because you think it's a flex on people or you just think it's cool, that's the target audience.
Imagine being in the coffee shop and you just see somebody's laptop screen like grow taller. I'm just thinking like, what are you overcompensating for here?
Like, we've heard Devendra say failure points 1,000 times by now, not go into it, but like when you're thinking about like whiz bang sort of new ways of interacting with your computer, think about build quality, and then that should inform your decision on whether or not you want to get that, because
And on a more practical level, like, I still prefer like the dual screen PCs because they sort of give you a similar effect, but less moving parts. You have glass screens on both sides and stuff like that. And so it just from like a design perspective, there's a bit more stability, a bit more, and it's, we're using the same sort of screens that you get on a regular laptop. So there's a little bit more of a, established, manufacturing quality to those systems. But, like I said, I like seeing where manufacturers are going to take us next as, technology evolves.
Gotcha. Anything else, Sam?
I'm actually testing out some sleep buds. I've mentioned before, I have like a weird crutch where like I need to fall asleep listening to something. And so I wear, I don't want to, blast stuff on the speakers and, keep the whole household up. So I wear earbuds to sleep and, I just started wearing them about last week. They're extremely comfortable, but there's some kind of issues that I'll probably get into when
is this the company that took the Bose Sleep Bud tech? Okay, that's cool.
It is, yes. And so, I said, they are extremely comfortable. They are probably the most comfortable sleep buds that I've ever worn while sleeping. But some of the other more kind of technical aspects, I feel like they need a little bit of polish.
Gotcha. Yeah, those things were interesting because they were like supposed to be like comfortable buds that just played white noise for people, and I got it for my wife as a thing, and they were just like really buggy, the first gen Bose ones. And then Bose gave up on it, but this company revived it, so that's cool. I hope it goes somewhere. Yeah.
Right. And the Bose ones, they only played white noise. Yes. They couldn't connect to Bluetooth. They couldn't, you couldn't, listen to a podcast or whatever. And that was a deal breaker for me because the white noise.
It was $200 just for white noise earbuds. That was the thing.
And so I do appreciate that the Oslo Sleep Buds, they can, whatever's playing on your phone, they can, you can listen to that too. So that obviously kind of ground rules for making sure
it's funny like how we get into these like sleep habits, like how we get to sleep. Basically, since my daughter was born and we were all sleeping in the same room, she had a white noise machine, and I just like really grew to like, that's the thing, I kind of need that. So now wherever I go, I need to play like white noise to fall asleep, even in hotels. So that's fun. Yeah.
My daughter is 11 months old, and we're hoping to move her out soon, but she's still sleeping in our room, and we have the white noise.
So soothing.
I need something else.
I get it. I totally get it. Okay. Well, I told you guys I'm working on the Windows 10 guide. What do you do next? So I'm writing that up right now. Got some like potential reviews too, but I think we can just move straight on to our picks for the week, our pop culture picks. And I could talk about Alien Earth. I've been checking out the new show created and written by Noah Hawley. He's the guy who did Legion on FX and also that Fargo TV show that was mostly good. I'm like iffy on him because I really wanted Legion to be cool, and I think it looked really cool. But man, that show spent a lot of time not going anywhere. And also, I'm a little prickly too, because like every profile about Noah Hawley is about how much of a genius he is. And he is one of those writers who's admittedly smart, but it does not mind talking about how much of a genius he is too. So like all that is kind of like, I get it, guy. You're good at this, but chill a little bit. Alien Earth is good though. Despite all of my like reservations about him, this is bringing the alien story right to Earth and doing new and interesting things, because the main pitch we've seen, like you know, what do you call them? Like the replicants, the actual robots in the alien world, you know, that look like humans. Those existed. We've seen like alien human hybrids. This show is introducing kind of a new level into that of a company that has developed technology to upload human brains into synthetic bodies. And these, they still think they're human because like they are effectively like they have human emotions. They just have the advantages of synthetic bodies, super strength. Like they don't die. They don't age. And of course, this show has aliens. So this is about a ship that crash lands onto Earth, I think before the events of the first Alien, and basically leaves a xenomorph and all sorts of creatures like crash lands with them. And all hell breaks loose, of course, because that's what happens. I think this show is fantastic. It is no Holly joint, though, so it takes a while to get going. It feels like an 8-hour long movie. But in terms of the ideas it's exploring, it does give you some of that like good old alien mayhem, right? Like it gives you the xenomorph chasing people and mowing people down. It gives you the sort of like corporate politics and how disgusting it is and how not far from today all of this feels, like these companies that basically own entire countries and are seeking out innovation in new and disgusting ways. It also stars Sydney Chandler, Kyle Chandler's daughter, who is fantastic, like incredible. Because the thing about these, you know, humans in synthetic bodies, they're all kids who are terminally ill. They're all kids who are about to die. They're being put into bodies of adults, essentially, like young, like teenagers, late teenagers. And they all basically have to play as if they are children in adult bodies. And I think they do a really good job of that. And Sydney Chandler in particular does a really good job of that. Timothy Oliphant is in this as well as one of the synthetics. And I was a little worried that we're not getting the like Timothy Oliphant charisma in this because he has to be a toned down synthetic. But there's room for that. There's room for a lot of that stuff.
I was going to say, is Timothy Oliphant not playing like a rogue sheriff cowboy?
He is playing a synthetic who is a security officer and is essentially has sort of that vibe, but it's not Timothy Oliphant in Justified where he could be like a bit of a rascal and like have a personality.
Okay.
It's not Timothy Oliphant in Deadwood where he could be like, he had like more of an attitude. This is a guy who has a personality, but he's also essentially a robot that has to follow orders in some ways. Fascinating, though. Like, as always, I think the synthetics and the use of AI in the Alien universe has always been the most interesting stuff. So, Alien Earth, it's premiering soon. August 12th. It's going to be on Hulu. If you have Disney Plus, click that little Hulu button. And you can see it right there. It is very, very good. I also really liked Alien Prometheus, the new movie that came out. Was it this year or last year? But I like that as well. This is more doing different things. This is showing us, first of all, the aliens on Earth. It's showing the Earth like in the future with all these corporations. I think all that is really fantastic. So yeah, I also want to quickly shout out Chief of War, which is the new Jason Momoa show, which is cool, like cooler than I expected it to be. I thought it was just gonna be another big budget Apple TV, you know, prestige TV thing, and it is sort of that, but it's also a historical epic about Hawaii in like the mid 1800s, where the different islands were different kingdoms basically warring against each other before colonialism like was a thing, before the West came in and started to like take over Hawaii. It's super authentic. It's shot entirely in native Hawaiian. I did not expect that. Like this show goes real hard to the point where also they're using native Hawaiian clothing and costuming, and a lot of that means you're seeing full-on Jason Momoa ass, because it's just you know, it's essentially G-strings for men.
I mean, I think that's part of the appeal.
That is part of the appeal. The opening of this show is Jason Momoa on a boat jumping into the water to hunt a shark. And listen, that's a great cold open. You got shark fishing with Jason Momoa, and Jason Momoa not being afraid to basically go all ass on this while he's shark hunting. Something for everybody in the show. It's also, I think like the drama of it is really interesting. It's kind of Game of Thronesy. The action is fantastic. Like it goes as hard as something like, you know, Braveheart or Gladiator. It feels a lot like Gladiator, actually. So highly recommended if you like historical epics, and especially if you want to see something a little different, not just like another European historical epic. This is something unique. So check out Chief of War. That's on Apple TV Plus. Anything you want to shout out, Sam?
Yeah, I've just been starting watching Kaiju number 8 season 2 that just came back for, its second season. I think there's like 4, maybe 5 episodes in. I'm only like a couple. And it just like, you know, it was like really reminded me what I like about the show. And it's like, you know, a really good twist on your traditional big monster hunting show. Obviously, it's an anime. And the action is always good. And they didn't waste too much time just like getting back into, you know, the pace of things. And so I appreciate that. That said, I did want to ask you, Devendra, if you saw the Predator Badlands trailer, because I think that came out while you were on vacation.
I saw that trailer. I mean, I know the person who directed it and wrote it, so I feel like I have to reserve my thoughts on all of it. But it is, okay. It looks cool as hell. It looks cool as hell. My only reservation is the thing about Predator that's cool is that it's a cool ninja dude in a mask, right? When you see the Predator's face, I think it's a kind of silly face. I think it's a kind of... It's a face only a mama would love,
I agree.
And it's really hard when that is your main character. So I feel like that's the only thing that could potentially like turn off audiences. But otherwise, like I think Dan Trachtenberg is such a solid action director. Like he knows his shit. And also, have you seen the Predator, the animated stuff, Sam? That's on Hulu. That's really good.
No, I haven't.
Because it's also him directing like Predator encounters across different time periods. And that's like... using the power of animation, you know, it's like very anime, so that's also worth checking out. I'm looking forward to Predator Badlands, though. That does look good. Have you seen the second season of Dandadan yet, Sam?
Yes. Oh, it's that show is still as good as ever. Enjoying it the hell out of it, but yeah,
so much fun. The new opening is not as good as the first opening, but you know,
no, the season one opening song is like an instant classic, but the show is still just as good.
So thank you everybody for listening. That's the end of the show. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on X or on Blue Sky. Either one works.
You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky, and also podcasts about movies and TV at The Filmcast, thefilmcast.com. Also, check me out on the Escape Hatch podcast, because I talked about the Bourne Supremacy there with those guys, Jason and H, like the cool dudes. If you want to hear me talk about why I love the Bourne Supremacy so much, which is one of the best action movies of the last few decades, check that out too.
If you want to suggest some like low stakes sports anime to me, I'm on Blue Sky at Hey Billman.
Ben, I got so many.
We got so many for you. Yeah.
So email us at podcast@engadget.com. Not about low stakes sports anime, but about anything else. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.